Goatee time, boys. Are you ready for a world premiere?
Are we doing world premieres
Can
now?
You imagine? Can you imagine? Just like a lot of like gameplay noises and be like, oh, wow, that was great, right? And now let's move on. Did you like the Game Awards? Did you both watch the Game Awards?
Yeah.
I didn't actually.
Right.
Which is weird. But I have an explanation for that, and it was game related, which we might come to later.
Okay. I watched the whole thing live and loved it. Crushed
the whole
it.
Thing. That was late. That was late for you.
I was so hyped. I was just like, I was riding the wave. Yeah, I was up until like 4 o'clock in the morning, but it was worth it. It was worth it. Oh man, it was such a good. I was jet lagged, which helped. So like, I wasn't sleeping very well that week anyway. But I think Keely crushed it. Like he wanted to pull out of the bag, right? Like we're gonna do the thing and. We're going to, you know, 10-year anniversary, all that kind of stuff. And I think he crushed it. Like, he cashed in every possible favor, right? Yeah. Like, if there was a favor to cash in, he cashed it in. And, you know, I think he could probably do more of this stuff, but I think he chooses not to. You know, like, to just be like, I'm just going to show the name of a game. Because...
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really mean anything, right? Like, you just get the moment and then move on, like, you know, like showing off like Okami or whatever. It's like, yeah. There's not really anything to show, but it was important for that one. I would just say, before we get onto what we're actually doing here, the thing I'm most excited about, obviously, is Intergalactic, the Naughty Dog game.
Yeah,
it genuinely looks like a whole different level of video game, like, with all of the like. There's like Porsches in it and Adidas is in it. Like, it's like different. Like, it's like, what is the highest budget you could put on something? It kind of feels like that's where they're going, and we'll see how that plays out for them, I suppose.
If there was one developer, I'd want to put the highest ever budget behind it, Naughty Dog.
Because the track record is so obvious, right? Like, it's a risk. I think it's a risk. Because it looks like they're going to put a lot of money in that. And like, what I think we're seeing, that's like been one of the big things this year, is seeing what happens when there's too much money put into video games. Lots of people lose their jobs. But I hope that they've, and again, like you, I think if anyone can do it and try to do it the best it can be done, I would put faith in them too. But we're here for Game of the Year. And I think I would like to follow our regular tradition where we each talk about the games that have been important to us this year, say what is our favorite game of the year, and then come to a consensus at the end of the show. So Federico, I would like to start with you.
Yeah.
Because I'm expecting you've probably got the deepest catalog this year. So I'm intrigued. Like, what have been your contenders and what would you call your game of the year?
Yeah, I played a whole bunch of games this year, and I did that mostly on my Steam Deck, but also quite a good portion of them on my Legion Go paired with an eGPU. But I would say mostly on the Steam Deck, which truly is the single console that I've used the most in 2024. I played many things that I didn't like, but I'm still happy that I did, because I tried a whole bunch of things, and that was... It was really an informative experience in terms of trying to understand, even when, for example, the press maybe likes a certain game. Like, for example, Animal Well. I played a whole bunch of Animal Well and realized, you know, this game is not for me. And this was part of a bigger realization in 2024 that I have discovered that as a person, I just don't like games that are too cryptic or mysterious, that don't... And I'm not saying that I want games to hold my hand and guide me, you know, Ubisoft style, you know, by saying literally go here and do that. Like, no, but I need some kind of on-ramp. I need some kind of explanation of what I'm doing and why I'm doing that. So I realized this year in playing a whole bunch of games like Animal Well, for example, or Crow Country was another one that I tried, another one of these indie darlings that was really well reviewed, and I understand why, but it's not for me. And that's fine, because that's the beauty of video games, is we are surrounded by so many games that it's okay to say, I understand why this game reviewed well, I understand why a bunch of people liked it, but it's not for me, and that's okay. I want to start from maybe the bottom of my list and move my way up. Balatro is the first game that I will mention. I played Balatro on my Steam Deck. I did not get into the mobile version at all.
Get into the mobile version.
No, no, I am concerned.
Do it.
No, no. I played Balatro on my Steam Deck because I'm afraid of what's going to happen if I put it on my phone. Yeah. Balatro is such an incredible story of how to take poker, which is something that I don't know how to play poker. I'm not a huge playing cards person in general in life, but Balatro, what a way to introduce people to the roguelike genre without explicitly making a roguelike. I think it's such an incredible achievement. You know, setting aside the graphics and the vibe and the music, just the core loop of Balatro and how it works and how it punishes you in a good way and yet it keeps you going. I think it's such a milestone of a video game made ostensibly by a single person, it seems, which I also appreciated that Local Thunk, the developer, did not show up at the Game Awards. Instead, sent two other people to receive the awards.
Yeah,
I thought that was like, you know what? More of these sort of characters in our industry. This is the sort of mystery that I appreciate. I do not appreciate mystery in gameplay, but I surely appreciate mystery in game developers.
Like, it's kind of like while I was rooting for a few games to win Game of the Year. When he didn't show up for the Best Indie Game, I think that's what he won, right? Best Indie Game. Then yeah. I was like, then I don't think I want you to win Game of the Year. Like, I know what you're saying, but also that kind of thing, it's a little disrespectful to the other developers, I think.
Yeah.
Like, there are people that this means so much to, and you decided not to come. And like, and I understand that it seems like this is just this person's thing. Like, they don't want the limelight. I think that it could rub people up the wrong way, right? Like, if that won Game of the Year and he just was not there.
Yeah.
Like, so, but yeah, I'm happy that they won something because it's worth it. Like, very much so.
I really liked... after Balatro, I will mention Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth. It has to be the RPG with the most heart and just a feel-good story, despite the characters being members of the Yakuza that I've played in my life. Like, it's such... Ichiban is such a lovable character. Mm-hmm. And, I mean... Also, like, visually speaking, I think it's a beautiful game. Setting the game in Hawaii, I think, was also a great decision to make it look really different from anything else that I've played.
How far did you play?
I think I have played about 30 hours. Okay. And I want to pick it up again over the holidays. I haven't done a lot in Hawaii. I still haven't gotten to Dondoko Island, for example.
Right.
But like, I think I've played enough, just because like that's what I've done with video games this year. I've played enough to be able to say, okay, what is a game that when I have more free time, I want to revisit?
Mm-hmm.
And I have three games of this kind that I want to revisit over the holidays, and all of them are RPGs. So maybe that says something about me. One of those other games is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which I was kind of lukewarm on Rebirth when I started. I'm also about 25 to 30 hours into Rebirth. They really went open world on this one, in the sense that they've taken the foundation of Final Fantasy VII Remake, which was completely set within Midgar, and they have extended it to a much bigger portion of the world. And in doing that, they have embraced so many of the modern open world tropes that you may find in a Ubisoft Assassin's Creed open world game, or maybe like a Horizon game on PlayStation. And initially that made me a little skeptical about Rebirth. But the thing is, I was able, after revisiting the game a couple of months ago, I was able to accept the fact that you don't have to do all those side quests, for example, or all of those like world objectives that pop up every 5 minutes. You can safely ignore those and proceed with the story and then revisit those side quests later. And I think because of that, I'm able to appreciate Final Fantasy VII Rebirth because of the sheer beauty of the world and just the cast of characters. It's a great It's a great hangout game in the sense, like, if you just want to boot it up and do a bunch of side quests just to hang out with Cloud and Barrett and Tifa and ride on some chocobos. And then you can also do the main story. But, like, that balance was what was missing for me at the beginning of the year when I tried Rebirth. And when I reapproached Rebirth later, I was able to appreciate that more. And that's why it's my second game that I want to revisit over my holiday break. Mm-hmm. I will then mention Zelda Echoes of Wisdom on the Nintendo Switch. I thought this was going to be my game of the year. This is not a Zelda game that I liked, obviously, as much as Breath of the Wild, which I think, as time goes on, Breath of the Wild is my favorite game of all time, more so than Tears of the Kingdom.
Yep.
I did not like Echoes of Wisdom as much as those games. And maybe that's why initially I was disappointed in Echoes of Wisdom. But once again, it's all about like trying to judge a game for what it's trying to do, not for the idea that you have made for yourself in your brain about a certain type of game. And once I accepted that Echoes of Wisdom was not trying to be a spin-off of Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom. It's a throwback. It's like, it's a throwback Zelda game where obviously you're playing a Zelda this time, mixed in with a puzzle game. There are issues, I think, in Echoes of Wisdom, like inventory management could have used some work. Performance on the Nintendo Switch, it's pretty rough, yeah. Which is why this game is not that high up in my list, but I still find it very enjoyable and I still... You know, it's a game that I want to see through, but not, maybe after the holidays, but it's definitely a game that I want to see through the end. Call of Duty Black Ops 6. Mm. This is higher in my list because I was not expecting to actually like the single player campaign of a Call of Duty game. And it's just, I think I mentioned this on the show before, it's just a fun game. It looks great, especially on PS5 Pro. It sounds fantastic, and the story is like watching a spy movie. I am not playing any multiplayer. I am not playing any of the other modes. I still think that these games could use like an easier interface and just an easier way to get started that doesn't involve navigating five different menus.
What does it say every time? Update.
Oh my God. Every single
time.
Every
time you open Call of Duty.
Update requires restart.
My God.
What are you updating? Why does it happen every time? I feel like... When I see that screen, I can see the development mistake that happened at some point in the past, right? That leads to them doing this now. But I'm also like, how much more money do you need to make to fix this problem? Like, why does this happen every time? Madness. I don't know what's going on. Especially because you get it when you open it, you launch the launcher, update requires restart, okay. Then I open Black Ops, and it's like, update requires restart. Why am I doing it twice? You know? Oh, madness. Madness. But yes. Yeah.
We're now getting in the top two spots in my list.
Spoilers.
And I was very torn between what's going to be my game of the year between these two. And I thought about this for the past few weeks. And I think I'm only picking one. Both of them could be my game of the year. But I'm picking one because of the ratio of time spent playing to just direct pure enjoyment. Like the minute-to-minute gameplay, which one of these two delivered the most enjoyment per time spent playing. So the game that is not my game of the year, but could easily be, and it's the third game that I will revisit over the holidays, is Dragon's Dogma 2. I became a Dragon's Dogma sicko this year. I never played the first one. This is the most fun I've had with an action RPG since Elden Ring, and it's got a very different vibe from Elden Ring. Dragon's Dogma 2 may look similar, like the color palette, the medieval style of the open world, but mechanically speaking, and from a pure vibes perspective, Dragon's Dogma 2 is almost like a comedic game. It's so fun and weird and strange in places, but what really worked for me is the sense of discovery. the sense of discovery and just wanting to see what's behind that hill, what's that small town by the sea like, without the game telling you anything, but still very subtly guiding you toward your next objective, toward your next discovery.
Mm-hmm.
I played about 60 to 70 hours of Dragon's Dogma 2, and there are so many moments that I remember so fondly from this year, like the one time that me and my pawns were just riding down a hill and suddenly we were attacked by a griffin flying down from the sky. And somehow we managed to beat the griffin, but at the very last minute, when I thought, okay, it's just like I need two more hits and this griffin is going down, the griffin basically grabbed me by my shoulders and the griffin flew away with me on a mountain. And so I was stuck on a mountain with my characters, with the pawns on the ground, and I didn't know what to do. I had to basically jump off the mountain and die because I got stuck. And now you may say, well, that's an issue of the game, but it's part of the charm of the quirkiness of Dragon's Dogma 2, a game that doesn't care about the modern, like it's a completely different experience from a Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, for example. Like it you may easily fail a side quest because the side quests, some of them are timed. And so if you don't complete them within a certain amount of time, they just go away. And like it's a game where the sense of immersion in the world is just off the charts. And yeah, I still think about Dragon's Dogma, and I really hope that Capcom can come up with like a like they did for the first game, like an expanded edition. Wouldn't be surprised if Dragon's Dogma 2, they did for the first one a remastered version called Dark Horizon. I wouldn't be surprised if Capcom does the same thing, and maybe it's a launch title for the Nintendo Switch 2. I could easily see that. But my game of the year, unsurprisingly, is Astro Bot on PS5.
I've got to stop you for a second, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I'm surprised by this because we talk a lot about video games, you and I, all the time. And I feel like you've barely spoken to me about Astro Bot.
Because there's very little to say, I think.
Okay.
It's like, do we often talk about Super Mario? Like, it's a game that speaks for itself, and it's just... It's what I was saying before, like the ratio of how many minutes have I spent playing this game and how many of those minutes do I think that maybe it was like a level that I didn't like, or maybe it was filler content, or maybe it was a different gameplay mechanic that didn't quite land. No, this game lands every single thing that it throws at you, like every single level, every single mechanic that is introduced, iterated, and then discarded at the end of the level. Like, I mean, graphically speaking, there's nothing to say. It looks incredible. It sounds incredible. It feels incredible with the DualSense. This game is the reason why I fell in love with my PS5 again this year. It's the reason why I decided to get a PS5 Pro, because I was playing more PlayStation 5 than... How long has it been around, the PS5? 3 years? 4 years?
This game came out in 2020.
Yeah, this game is the reason why I played a lot more PS5 this year. I didn't think that it was possible for a PlayStation game to have the same degree of refinement and elegance and fun of a Super Mario game, and this game does it in a way that you can see the inspiration from Mario Sunshine, from Super Mario Galaxy, from Pikmin in places even. But it's got its own nature at the same time. It's got its own... It's trying to tell its own story in terms of what it's like for a relatively small team. I believe Team Asobi is like 60 people. And the fact that they have been able to deliver this masterpiece this year, that's why it's my game of the year. I love Astro Bot so much.
Choice. I expect we're going to talk about it some more. Shahid, do you want to talk about your contenders for Game of the Year? And what is your Game of the Year?
Certainly. The number three in my Game of the Year list is Animal Well. And I have the same kind of feeling towards its esotericism that perhaps you do, Federico. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. I loved that it challenged me, and I loved that it exists. It's beautiful. It's small. It's self-contained. It's deep. It's also arcane to the point of frustration, if you really want to get the most out of it. But I'm so pleased it exists. I had fun while I played it. I don't regret playing it at all. And that's why it's my number three. In a world where we have become utterly polarized and where indie is suffering massively, it's a delight to me that games like Animal Well and games like Balatro exist and can take the big stage. Now, I want to seg from this very quickly, Mike, to a point you made about the developer of Balatro. I'm pleased he did what he did, or she did. It sounds disrespectful, but I think video games and the creation of video games is intrinsically different to the creation of, say, movies. Actors nearly always see the limelight, less so directors. In video games, you don't see developers necessarily seizing the limelight. The developer usually has a large face because it's a large organization. And you see figureheads, and figureheads are PR trained, and they know what it's like to have their life under scrutiny. Though video game creators don't come under nearly the same scrutiny as perhaps film stars. Music has some parallels with video games in that songwriters don't necessarily get the stage because they write hits for big names. But the big names who don't always write their own songs, or who have co-writing credits because they wrote just one line or added a certain change to a melody, they're used to it. They've been trained from birth about how to handle media, and even they don't do too well. So I would argue that with the creation of video games, it's very hard to pinpoint one single figure that deserves accolades, along with all of the downsides that come with it. And it doesn't happen to the games that sees the most limelight. So if I were to ask both of you, which one person would best represent Black Ops 6, it might be hard for either of you to name one person to be that figurehead.
I have no idea who, I just don't know. who would it be? No idea.
And that's because there isn't one.
Yeah.
Because games of that scale have now become an industry in their own right. You might be tempted to pick a streamer. So, for example, for me, I'm Marksman is a really, really big COD streamer who's been playing the Call of Duty games for 17 years and is more of a face of that franchise for me than any single developer who's worked for any of the developers that have made this game possible. So when it comes to something like Balatro, right, it's clear the developer is now minted. Their life has changed beyond all recognition. What are they going to do if they're suddenly presented with this life-changing visibility? Is it going to necessarily enhance their life? Will it allow them to engage more with fans? Will it mean anything to engage with fans who love the game regardless, right? Because it's not part of that. Whereas with Taylor Swift, for example, the whole Taylor-stick shtick is to engage with the fan base in unique and unusual ways. That's a life in its own right. So I'm not saying I applaud the developer of Balatro. I'm saying I understand the developer.
Sure.
Because it is a very, very different arrangement,
Let me just say, because we're all just having this conversation here. Obviously they should be able to do whatever they want. And if they don't want to get up on the stage, they were at the Game Awards. They didn't snub the Game Awards. They just didn't want to go on the stage. And I understand that. And I kind of did want it to win Game of the Year. But at the same time, it's just do you understand the point that I'm making? That if that game would have won the absolute top prize, I can imagine there being some people who would be frustrated by if they didn't win, because they didn't get that moment where the developer of that game just didn't want the moment. It's just a matter of different people's perspectives more than me saying, I think it would be right or wrong.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where I have a strong opinion, but it's loosely held. I could easily be swayed the other way, right?
Yeah. I think I feel exactly the same as you. Right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, and it's okay. I completely respect your opinion, and I would never come to blows with you.
No, let's do it. You know? Let's go right now, me and you outside.
Black Ops 6, let's
do
it.
Oh, no, see, now you've given me an unfair playing field.
Which brings us very neatly onto my number two, which is Black Ops 6, which I have played to death. And I actually started late. And the reason I started late is because I was already utterly addicted to Modern Warfare 3, which I'd been playing on my PS5. I'd prestiged. I'd gone beyond. I mean, I played Modern Warfare 3 multiplayer an awful lot and became half decent at it.
Mm.
And I mean, we're talking about several hours a day. And it coincided with a period where I had to stay off my feet for reasons I won't go into. But it was a wonderful way to convalesce. And I really got back into it. I mean, I obviously completed the campaign. I've been much more of a campaign player. So this year has been the year of Call of Duty for me. I mean, I played the Cold War version. I played all the remasters of the originals. I played all of the Call of Duty campaigns, but I didn't get into multiplayer because I thought the game, so to speak, had moved on and I wouldn't be competitive. But then I started to play Modern Warfare 3 multiplayer and absolutely loved it. Started to get better, started to watch all the videos, totally became immersed in the world. Went from hating the interface to understanding it, went to really appreciating the depth and the amount of changes that are in the game, learned how to slide cancel and do all the things that, you know, the really good players do in order to get an edge, found all the best places to snipe from, found all the head glitches, learned all the terminology, you know? And that's something I never expected to happen, guys. I mean, one of the things that has changed remarkably for me this year is that I've become a gamer again. And all throughout this podcast, I don't think there's ever been a point at which I've played so many video games for so long, for so many hours a day, on every platform.
Yeah.
So going to Black Ops 6, it's wonderful. It has flaws, but it's early. You know, it's season one. I bought the Vault Edition, even though I had the free Xbox version. So I upgraded that. I've been working my way through the battle pass, nearly completed the battle pass, got all the weapon unlocks and prestiged, and I'm now nearly closing on prestige two. Been watching the streams, wake up with that theme music ringing in my head. I kid you not, every morning, that
you're a capital G gamer now, Shahid. You're like, that's where you are right now.
You have no idea. I bought Control Freaks sticks. You know, those stick covers that extend the right-hand stick.
No, I
more
don't.
Grip.
Okay. I have no idea what you're talking about. So I'm That's
using,
incredible.
Yeah, I'm using the Elite Control. I'm using the Control Freak stick caps to get more leverage on the aim. I've learned how to use rotational aim assist a lot better. I've learned the Omni movement pattern, slide cancelling, diving and then sliding. Doing the Hollywood stuff, like, for example, jumping off the top of a flight of stairs while I'm being chased by a shooter while I'm on low health, sliding down the stairs, rotating round, diving onto my back, shooting up towards the top and nailing them from the bottom of the stairs, just like John Wick. And I tell you, nothing else has given me this feeling of gunplay the way Black Ops 6 has. In that respect, in terms of gunplay, it's an absolute masterpiece. There are some issues. The maps are not as good as previous years, but I think they'll introduce better maps. I mean, it's hard to be tactical on some of these maps because there are just a billion places where you can get cover, and there are open lanes all over the place. So there's nowhere you can take a breather. And I think that's intentional. I don't think it's good design, but I do think it's intentional. It's designed to drive engagement so that players who are inferior can always get a lucky shot at a good player.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I completely understand that. But everything about this game, apart from the interface issues, which we alluded to earlier, is of such high quality. The gunplay is of high quality. The leveling up system is of high quality. I'm working my way through all the camo unlocks. Trust me, these are words I never thought I'd utter in the last 9 years of this show. I've got my gold camo unlocked for my primary AR. I'm close to getting gold camo for my SMG, which is beautiful. And then I've been using this light machine gun, which is a battle pass unlock, for the stakeout levels. And it's a shame I don't get kill streaks on there, because today I played a game where I got, I think, 12 of the guys in like 5 seconds. It was absolutely astonishing with that thermal sight. So yes, I've turned into a gamer.
Yeah.
I'm loving it. I've had so much fun, and I don't think even a minute of it was a moment wasted, because I don't feel bad at the end of the day. Yeah. I'm not using it to distract myself from the rest of my life. I'm using it because it's giving joy. I mean, I'm truly enjoying the video game for the sake of enjoying the video game. I'm enjoying the grind because it doesn't feel like a grind. I want my guns to be gold. And yes, I will level up all 7 ARs so that I have diamond camos on all of them. I don't think I'm going to go so far as to get the final camo unlock, which is a dark matter, because every streamer seems to have it. It's like, you guys probably used bot lobbies and VPN, and you probably two boxed it. And you see, I know all the terminology now. I know this thing inside out.
This is so reminiscent of Federico's competitive Pokemon time.
Yes, yes.
Like, because I can follow what you're saying, but I don't know what any of it means, right? But like, I was like, okay, I'm understanding this, but I can't explain it back to you, you know?
I haven't even mentioned the calling card challenges. I haven't even mentioned the fact that there is also a zombies mode, which is completely different from the zombies mode in Modern Warfare 3, and which would make it a lot easier to get the dark matter unlock, because you can get headshots so easily in zombie mode. You know, you just get a level where you're spawning tons of zombies, line them up somewhere, round them up, and just get headshot after headshot. So I haven't even done that, and I will play that at some point, maybe if I'm struggling to get
The impression that like that has been appreciated by the community, right? That you, whatever you're playing, you're benefiting yourself in that way, where like the fact that this time the work that you do in zombies still levels up the guns that you play in multiplayer.
Yeah, there are different levels of unlock as well. So for example, there are reticle unlock challenges as well. So you've got some reticles that are shared across the games. There are some reticles that are exclusive to multiplayer, some reticles that are exclusive to zombie mode. I've unlocked a load of shared reticles. So, you know, each reticle has a new challenge assigned to it. So there are loads and loads of ways of testing yourself. There have been the daily challenges as well, for example. You know, you've got to strike off 3 challenges in order to get a massive XP boost. And of course, I've been doing those every single time, and I've been doing them in no time at all. Look, I'll tell you this for free. On the double XP weekend, I played for 24 hours in 2 days.
Wow.
Gamer! What a gamer.
In 2 days.
Oh, man, I love this for you, Shahid. I really do. I love it.
But you know what? Despite all that, it's not my game of the year.
I genuinely can't believe it. Like, genuinely, I cannot believe that you could say all of that and this is not your game of the year.
Because I'm being detached about it. I would use the same metric as Federico. The game that gave me more joy per second, more delight per second, more laugh out loud moments per second than any other by far was Astrobot. A work of diamond-like genius, a jewel of a game, every moment carefully crafted, beautifully scripted to surprise and delight. Everything that went into that game seems to have come out. You know the way some games feel like, oh, if only they'd done it like this, it would have been so much better. There is not a moment in Astrobot where you feel that. It genuinely feels like every moment that you play, something new and magical is going to happen, something unexpected. And it invariably does. It's almost like they've anticipated your thinking process through every moment, every level in that game, and catered to it and provided you with answers to what if questions in your head that are only just forming. And just as they're forming in your head, that exact thing happens. No other game I've seen this year comes close to nailing that other than Astrobot. And I'm not saying this because I'm a PlayStation guy. Of course I'm a PlayStation guy. That's never going to change.
We all are at this point, you know.
We are, right. Yeah. But I've been playing Black Ops 6 on an Xbox Series X.
Yeah.
Right? But I played Astrobot and I played Modern Warfare 3 to death on a PS5. I have been playing my Steam Deck an awful lot, but the PS5 allows Astrobot in a way that no other console does because of exactly what Federico said about how this game feels. How it feels in your hand is remarkable. There's nothing that approaches the tactility of this game, the feedback of this game, yep. the sense of attachment to what's going on in the world. So for that reason, Astrobot is easily my number one, even though I'll likely be playing Black Ops for the next year and probably not have a life apart from Black Ops.
I mean, COD is a way of life. You know, it's just like, that's where you are of it. All right. Thank you, Shade. Big surprise. Got to say, I'm very shocked by that. I have a list that is not ordered. I'm going to start with Astrobot. It is an absolute marvel of a video game. Like, it is truly obscene to me that a game of this quality we found out about and was released within the same year.
Yeah.
It is absurdly good. I cannot remember a video game that has given me the amount of joy, just pure joy, that this video game has given me. And it is because it's pulling on different threads where the game design is so good, but also it is the first time that Sony has ever truly understood the value of nostalgia of their IP. Like, they have such incredible characters, weird, wonderful, and high quality. And this is, I think, one of the key things about what makes Astrobot feel like a Nintendo game is they found a way to celebrate their characters. Like, the VIP bots, those levels, like the Uncharted level, is truly marvelous. Like, all of them were, but, like, I had such a great time playing that level. The level where you shrink down, like, mouse-like, because every level you get access to some kind of ability. Some of them are reused, some of them aren't. The only thing that I wish they would have done more of was that, like, shrinking and growing mechanic from
that was
one.
So good.
I know why they didn't, because I bet that took, like, as long as, like, anything in the game would have taken. But it was brilliant. The way in which they used the DualSense from a sound and feel perspective is a true masterclass in game design and understanding the hardware and how it can connect. This is the game that makes me happy I own a PlayStation 5, a console that I have been wholly unhappy with. I do not feel like I personally, up until Astrobot, played any game that felt like it required the price of my PlayStation 5. And this game absolutely did that, because it wasn't like a 10% graphical improvement. It was a true, like, understanding of how these games should be designed and developed. The closest I think that I got to prior to this was, actually, no, I'm lying, because I've forgotten about Spider-Man. Spider-Man kicked so much butt and it needed the PlayStation 5. So between those two, Spider-Man and Astrobot, but that's two games in 5 years nearly, right? And we don't need to get into it, but clearly the PlayStation 5, I don't think, has gone the way that Sony wanted it to go. And my expectation is the latter end of the PlayStation 5's life cycle is going to really make up for the beginning. But Astrobot is just truly marvelous. We're probably going to talk about it again in a minute. As some other games, I have played the majority of the Call of Duty Black Ops 6 campaign. I've not completed it yet, but I'm going to. It's just great. like the variability in the challenges that you're doing, like from just typical gunplay going in, you know, doing a siege on a thing to, oh, now you're like, you've got a spy camera and you're taking pictures of Bill Clinton. And then the one of the best things I played this year, which was the open world level where you're, I don't remember where you are. I think is it in Iraq and you're just driving around in those trucks and you know you can just basically just go wherever you want in this large open world desert area, and then you do this like castle siege storm thing at the end. But just like gameplay design, the gameplay design of Call of Duty Black Ops 6 is so extra, and that's what I like about it. They took a lot of risks and chances and divergences in this campaign that they did not need to do to make like the COD players happy, but they did it anyway, and I respect that. Dragon Age: The Veilguard, also a game that I've yet to complete. Just a good time. Just like for me, I feel like I needed Dragon Age after playing Baldur's Gate to get my expectations reset for the future of RPGs. Like Baldur's Gate is what it was, and we cannot assume now that every adventure RPG is going to be like that, because it can't be. It's impossible to produce that. But Dragon Age is a fantastic focused adventure game, mm-hmm. where like Baldur's Gate is like, well, what do you want to do, right? It's like an open world RPG in that sense of like you can just choose to do whatever you want. You know, like Dragon's Dogma maybe getting a little bit closer towards a Baldur's Gate, right? Like from the way that Federico describes it. It's a little bit more open and weird, right?
Yeah.
Where Dragon Age is like, here's the story. You're playing the story. Ultimately, more my speed for an RPG game, I think, for this kind of adventure RPG. I like this. And I also like the combat a lot, like because you're just working out some combos. I like that combo, that like style a lot more than the D&D rules of Baldur's Gate. So I'm having a great mm-hmm. time with Dragon Age, and I'm going to finish it, I think, over the holidays. I'm going to put a mark for Fields of Mystria in here, because this will be a Game of the Year contender when it's finished. I played basically all of the content. They've released a little bit more that I haven't played yet, but I think I'm going to wait now for a fuller version of Fields of Mystria. It's essentially the next Stardew Valley, and it's very well made. The art design's fantastic. The mechanics are really good. It's like, what if you took a bunch of these types of games, took the best things of all of them, and leveled them up a little bit? And I think this is a very good game that is going to get some great polish and be a real contender when it comes out at whatever point. It's in early access now. I want to give a mark to Thank Goodness You're Here, which is just a very fun, quick video game. It's just a point-and-click adventure with really weird British humor that I appreciated a lot, and I think is a game that lots of people could play because it's an easy game to play. It's a point-and-click adventure game, and I had a lot of fun with it, and I recommend it to people as maybe a palate cleanser between games. You'll get it done in a couple of hours, really, maybe a little bit more than that. But if you come off a big game, you've got another, you don't know what you want to play next, put Thank Goodness You're Here on the list. Maybe that game that you're coming off of is Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, which is the game by hours I have played the most of this year, and I think I only got about 2/3 of the way through it. I loved this game until I got horrendously stuck and didn't want to do it anymore. I think this game is too long, and maybe that is funny to people that play these games because that's what they're all like. It is essentially 4 video games in one, and I am not exaggerating that. I spent like 20 hours on Dondoku Island. That on its own was enough for me. Because you do the whole thing. It's like a whole story you can do on Dondoku Island. You can leave if you want to, or you can stay and do the whole story. And I think I did about 20 hours just on that one part of the game. But like, you've got the part before that, you've got that, and then you've got like 2 more games after. It's bananas how big this game is. I enjoyed every minute I played until I got to a boss fight that I couldn't win and I couldn't go back to, like could come back from without reloading, and I didn't want to do the grinding, and then I fell off it. But it's a fantastic video game with a ton of heart. And even as someone who'd never played these games before, I still really resonated with the story, which is actually supposed to be pulling on a lot of nostalgia for people who have played the history of these games. But yeah, it's really great. And I really wished I hadn't gotten stuck at that moment, because I was playing that game every day and having a great time. It looks so good on my OLED Steam Deck that that's my like biggest regret of this year, is that like I don't know why I wasn't prepared enough for that fight, but it just sucked it out of me, because I was like, oh, for me to be able to do this, I have to get good in a bunch of ways that I'm not currently good at. It seems like it just hit a difficulty ramp like incredibly hard at that moment, and I just wasn't good enough for it. And then the last game for me that we'll talk about is Balatro. This game is truly astounding. It is astounding and outstanding. I played a bunch of it on Steam Deck, had a fantastic time of it, but it is probably, I feel confident saying, the best mobile game of all time. It crushes everything. Like, I wonder what the trajectory of this game would have been like if it came out on iPhone first. Like, I just wonder what that would have done to it. Because it's perfect. It's essentially a poker game, but the rules of poker don't really matter, and you have these joker cards that can adapt the way that the game, it adapts the rules and the way that the game is played and how the game is scored. Boys, I play maybe an hour or two a day of Balatro.
Still?
Yeah, I'm playing it. I'm playing it, man. If I'm commuting, I'm playing it. If I'm getting ready for bed, like I'm just like chilling out, I'm playing it. I'm playing hours of Balatro a day. And like, it is coming to the iPhone. Like, you know, you know this about me. I have like, there'll be an iPhone game that I will play constantly. It was Threes. Domino Drop was one of them. Finity. Finity was another one. And now it is this. And like, I cannot say enough good things about this game. The thing is, like, it's not deep enough for me to be able to like wax poetically about it, right? But it is just like I just find it to be like perfect. Like, it's just a truly outstanding video game and just a brilliant, brilliant iPhone game. In the last, like, this week, I have played, I'm looking at my screen time stats, I've played 8 hours of Balatro this week so far, so 5 days into this week. I just play it every day. And they adapted it so well for the iPhone. It really benefits from being played on a touchscreen. Like, I played it when I was playing it on my Steam Deck, I was using the touchscreen most of the time. So like, it was like a very good thing to bring over. And again, like, similarly to Astrobot, right? Like, in like, we heard about it and then it came out in within a year. Balatro was like, hey, here's this game, took off. And then within the same year, it's on the iPhone and it's on, I think it's on Android too. Yeah, this game is quite rightfully like storming this year. It deserves to win many awards. I came into this discussion today conflicted. So my two top games this year are Astrobot and Balatro.
Yeah.
And I, on any given day, I flip-flop between the two of them. They're so different, but they are just so good. The thing that I think is swaying me today is what Federico said about like enjoyment multiplied by time played, where Balatro is not giving me that. Because like, I'm just playing it all the time, and I am not like blown away by it every time I play it. But I'm enjoying it all the time. But Astrobot is such a unique experience. Like, I don't feel like I often laugh when playing video games, even if they're funny. Like, video game humor will rarely get me to laugh out loud, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if I, like, even Thank Goodness You're Here is probably the funniest video game I've ever played, but I never once was like, haha, like, I just don't do that. But Astrobot got me closest, because there are just things that happen in the game that just elicit reactions from me. So I think I mean, I'm swept up in the conversation right now to call Astrobot my game of the year. So we have like a three-way consensus. I really hope that this video game sells so much more post game of the year season, because it seemed like the reports were like it sold in, you know, maybe 1 or 2 million copies, which is incredible, but this game deserves so much more than that. And I really hope that like it winning just so many awards it's going to win over the whole game of the year season and the holidays will really give it a boost, because PlayStation, they've got something here. Like, I think they have their legitimate actual mascot, and they play it right. Like, this thing's going to be amazing. So let's call it Astrobot as our game of the year. What a, just a joy. What a joy of a video game. Who would have thought it, right? Like, that Sony could have a Nintendo game. You know what I mean?
If you ask me at the beginning of the year, where we're going to be with our game of the year, I wouldn't have said, oh, it's going to be a Sony platformer with the new Sony mascot. Like, no. What an incredible achievement.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Congrats, Astrobot. It's the remastered 2024 game of the year.
Before we finish today, unfortunately, this show is coming to an end.
Mm-hmm.
It's been an incredible 9 years, and if you're sad about this, you can point your blame to me. Recently, my wife and I shared that we're expecting our first child, and this has forced me to make some sad decisions about cutting down some projects. Unfortunately,
no. We're pointing the blame at the baby. Mike,
point the blame at
you.
My child, yeah. Because then, actually, yeah, don't blame me. Blame my baby. Don't blame me. Blame the baby. It's all their fault. Yeah, this is unfortunately one of the projects that I've decided that I need to wind down. I want to thank my incredible co-hosts. This show has been a joy. Every episode is a surprise in wild and wonderful ways. From Shahid turning into just a ravaging gamer, from where he was at the beginning of wanting to murder Mario in a back alley somewhere, from the incredible guests that we've had on this show over the years, to hearing about to detailing in great excruciating detail Federico's move into competitive Pokemon and back out again, and then all of the weird and wonderful gaming hardware we've seen over this time. And I know we've got a really dedicated, lovely listenership of this show who I want to thank so much, who've tuned in over these years. So if you guys have anything to say, that's it from me.
No, I feel like the musicians on the Titanic. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure.
We're just playing. We won't stop. We just keep playing as it goes down, you know.
We're playing through it. Yeah.
Shahid, thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Every episode, every moment. And yeah, I never expected to end up a gamer at the end of all this.
It's the perfect way to end.
What really. A journey. What a Wonderful. Journey. He ended up liking Mario and being a gamer.
Yep.
Perfect.